everybody. Welcome to the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast, the podcast that puts the pop in your popcorn. I'm your host, Pete Pollock, and this week on the show, The Last Emperor. I don't know what they're talking about, The Last Emperor, because this guy died in the 60s. I always thought Ming the Merciless was the last emperor, and he hasn't even happened yet. But, we'll find out more coming up. The Last Emperor tells the story of Pu Yi, and if you've never heard of him, perhaps you've heard of the country he came from, which is China. And he was the last emperor of China, really for a relatively short time. And then he stopped being emperor, and China kind of fell into the hands of a bunch of warlords. And then good old Mao stepped up to the plate, and he took everything over, and it was all communist. And that's the backdrop for the majority of this film. He was the last emperor. Pu Yi was the last emperor of the Qing dynasty, and he came into power, such as it is, at age 3, which is kind of what happens when your political system is based on the royal family concept, and there's no other family around that's handy to hand it off to. So he becomes the emperor at age 3, and of course he doesn't have a lot to say about being emperor, and doesn't even really know that he's emperor. He just knows that as he grows up, anytime he does something wrong, somebody else gets punished for it, and he gets to wear a lot of really cool clothes. And he lives in the Forbidden City, which is, by any stretch of the imagination, a really awesome place. I'd love to check out the actual Forbidden City sometime. This was all filmed there, so you get to see quite a bit of it, and it really is an amazing, impressive, giant home for the emperor. It opens up with him, his aunt, the empress, dying and naming him as emperor, and then he grows up. And what more can you say? He lives the life of Riley. He's having a great time. He's totally rich, and the great thing about being emperor when you're young, or even as he gets older, is he doesn't really need to mess with politics at all. Nobody even bugs him about that. By the time he's of age that politics might start affecting him, he's already stopped being emperor. He's given up the throne. He didn't even really know it because, the different guys started to take power outside of the Forbidden City, and he's not allowed to leave the Forbidden City, so he basically exists in kind of his own little world, surrounded by eunuchs and women. Which is, in many ways, it's not a bad life, I guess. As long as you don't mind the scenery, because he doesn't get to see much, like I say. He doesn't get to leave the Forbidden City. He grows up and becomes a somewhat likable guy. Unfortunately, and this is something I realized, because I did see this film years ago when it came out, and I was really amazed and blown away by the spectacle of it all. And in between then and now, I also read his autobiography. And you start to see, and you can see in the film, watching it the second time through, or third, or whatever it is that watching it recently was for me. You can see that he's really not as strong a character as I thought the first time I saw the film. He shows anger, and he's not happy with some of the things that are going on in China when he finds out about them, and he wants to affect change, but really, when he really wants to make big changes on things, they turn out to be small changes, like with how the Forbidden City is run, or, he gets kind of sidetracked, fooling around with his multiple wives, or, playing tennis. That's kind of what he does. And being tutored by Peter O'Toole's character, Reginald Johnston, who is the British guy who he imports to teach him when he feels like he's pretty much learned enough, as much as he can, from his tutors within the Forbidden City, brings Peter O'Toole in an awesome role, by the way. Peter O'Toole at his best is great, and he's certainly great in this film. and he shows up and becomes his friend, and they spend a lot of time together. And eventually, the country at large, as changes are happening and different warlords are coming in and there's turmoil, eventually one of the warlords takes power and says, you know, I'm tired of these guys hanging out in the Forbidden City doing their own thing. The Emperor hasn't really been a symbol of anything for a long time. And besides that, he's Manchurian. And we don't really, you know, because the Qing Dynasty was Manchurian, not to get into the whole history of it, but they were Manchurian. So they were kind of viewed as outsiders by the mainstream Chinese. And he said, and the warlord says, you know what? We want this guy out of here. Let's just get rid of him. So he boots him out, and thus begins the next phase of Puyi's life, where he kind of becomes a playboy, and he wants to get his emperorship back. And this is all pre-World War II, so who's the big player in the vicinity at the time but the Japanese? So, you know, he starts making deals with the Japanese, and let's just say that the Japanese are not really... They're playing him for a puppet. And you learn that pretty much early on, so I'm not giving a whole lot away. But this is what he goes through in his life and the changes, trying to become a puppet emperor and then stand up for himself. And eventually he falls into the hands of Mao's Chinese communists, and they put him through a re-education program to turn him into a communist. Now, you can... wonder, and the movie leaves it kind of ambiguous as to whether or not he actually ever becomes a communist. In real life, he did start, you know, espousing those ideals, but a lot of people feel that he didn't really believe in it. He said what he had to do to stay alive, which is understandable. So what you've got in this film, and it's almost 3 hours, is a sweeping look at this guy's life. So whether or not you like the film really, I think, largely depends on whether or not you like the guy and whether or not you like what it has to say about his life. Now, for me personally, I did like it. You know, I think that his character, like I say, is kind of weak and doesn't always do the right thing. That's kind of a human thing to do. He's not always taking the stand or being the guy that you'd like him to be for a Hollywood hero, you know, in a film. But he's not that. He's just a dude who got caught up in a lot of historic circumstances and move through them. And it really has a lot to say about China and the history of China at the time as well. But the whole movie centers on Puyi, and he's really the one who carries it. In my mind, I think the character carries it very well, and I think the actor who plays him carries it very well. The people who are around him do a great job as well. You know, it's a constantly changing cast. There are a few people who carry through for long periods of time, but a lot of them, you know, over the 60-year-ish sweep of the film, you know, people change and come and go. But overall, so it's got a large cast, but it's very well put together. And the spectacle of what it must have been to be an emperor, which is mostly in the early parts of the film, is pretty amazing. You know, you look at this and it's like, wow. You know, I mean, this is a part of life that arguably maybe shouldn't exist anymore, because emperors don't really have their place. but you know, to see that, it's just it's an amazing little bit of history, and you see some of what life must have been like, and it is kind of phenomenal, and it's fascinating to watch. It's kind of like watching an episode of Nova or something on the History Channel, but done with a huge budget and directed by Bernardo Bertolucci. So it's really well done. And I do consider this to be an excellent film all the way around. I think it's got a lot to say about maybe not as much about the human condition, because this guy ends up in conditions that most people are never, ever going to see. And things happen to him that are never going to happen to the rest of us. But it does say a lot about China and about people and how they interact and about how they use each other. And a lot to say about politics, because you can see parallels, even, you know, moving into other political situations, about how people make statements and you know, play each other and stuff. So I think this is a great film, and I think it's fascinating to watch. I'm going to call it a low buy it, because it may not be for everybody. It certainly was for me, and I actually went out and bought the Blu-ray of it, which looks phenomenal. It's a Criterion collection thing, and it's great. So if you're going to buy it and you got a Blu-ray player, I'd recommend getting that one. But in any event, certainly see this film. It's certainly worth checking out if you get the chance. That's it. Next week on the show... Next week is Driving Miss Daisy. And, well, it'd be hard to think of a film that's probably much more different from The Last Emperor than Driving Miss Daisy. But this is another one that I saw when it came out. And so it'll be interesting to see what I think of it a bunch of years later. We'll find out. Until then, I am Pete Pollock. This is the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast, a production of the Big Noisy Bug Media Empire. Have a great week, everyone.